Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hello and welcome to the Ad News podcast, recorded at Forbes Street Studio. I'm the Ad News editor, Pippa Chambers, and today I'm joined by Integral AdScience CEO, Scott Knoll. Hi, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this isn't your first time in Australia. You're just telling me, can you tell us a little bit about how you first came to Australia?
Yeah, so I joined DoubleClick. This is in the late 1990s, and I'd lived in Asia before that, and so automatically, being an American company, they thought I knew all about Australia, even though I hadn't been here. So I came here and opened up the office, and lived here a year and a half. And I like to say I learned digital media in Australia, which is a great place to learn it.
Where were you living when you were here before?
So I live in Elizabeth Bay.
Okay, lovely. Very nice.
It was beautiful.
Okay, so I just want to start with, I guess, talking a bit about your role and how you kind of came to get that role, you know, CEO of Integral AdScience. How did that come about?
So I was in the industry for a long time, and working at DoubleClick, started in Australia, and then I lived in Asia for a while and in New York. So I guess I had a lot of good ad tech experience, and this opportunity came up 7 years ago, and I was looking for a company that was doing something that ultimately would show that premium publishers had good content, and I felt like we were, as an industry, commoditizing media, and there's data out there that would show that media actually mattered. And I thought if this company, AdSafe, could look at data and determine what ads, what environments were inappropriate for ads, we could use that same data to find what environments were appropriate. And didn't quite play out that way, but fortunately, I joined the company. It's been a great ride.
Yeah, so I guess having that background in digital media and DoubleClick, you were fully, understanding of what IAS is offering is from the beginning. Because obviously in ad tech, there's a lot of jargon and clutter, and there's a lot of, you know, trying to understand a lot of these things. How was that for you kind of joining or looking at starting to join IAS?
I spoke all the acronyms, so
I
knew what they meant. I actually, the other part of it was, you know, at the time, the main offering that AdSafe had was a brand safety solution. And I was part of another data network company and ended up on the wrong end of a brand safety issue a couple times, and realized that there wasn't an easy solution, and it wasn't like I was purposely putting ads on inappropriate content. It's just the way we were buying media made it possible without anyone being able to do anything about it. So I like the fact there was actually a solution that could stop it from happening. And, you know, in that case, really no harm, no fall, as we say, where everyone's okay because it never actually ended up on the page.
And what about, how do you describe, I guess, to your friends and family what you do? Do you think they fully understand?
I stopped trying. the easiest way, I had my daughter is now in third grade, but when she was in first grade, I had her whole class in my company, and I was trying to figure out how to explain it to them. I showed them a video. And I showed him another commercial, and I said, which one do you like better? And I showed him, like, one for a second and one for 5 seconds and said, which one
was it, one without ads, one
better?
With ads?
Yeah, and in the end, they kind of got what I did because they were voting on it. And it was actually really funny because there was a famous actress who was in the class, and she, turns out, went the week before me. So she talked about acting and everything. So I had a really high bar.
Wow, tough.
And I heard two of the kids walking out that day saying, "Oh, this is my favorite one yet to date." So I was like,
"Wow, what did you say? What did you say?"
We just watch videos. We watch commercials.
Watching
and talk
TV.
About it, and they actually liked it.
And I guess in terms of, you know, if you always think it's interesting, if you weren't in this industry, you know, you've obviously been in it for a long time, you know, did you envisage yourself working in this kind of ad tech sphere? What would you be doing if you weren't working in ad?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. I often ponder it. I've been in this industry for so long, so I can't imagine not being in it. But someday I hope that I would do something charity related. It's something that I'm passionate about, or I have interests outside of ad tech, like fly fishing, for example. So if I had a dream job, I'd probably be selling or manufacturing like high-end fly fishing equipment.
Oh, that's interesting. And what about you? What did you study at university? Anything related to?
I studied economics, no.
Oh, okay. It's kind of okay. And I guess in terms of your experience in Australia, and obviously you've worked in Australia before and being the global CEO, how do you kind of, what's your sort of view of Australia and where do you get that understanding? You know, how often do you come over? How do you kind of suss out, you know, I guess the different regions and what your views are?
Yeah, so first of all, I have a ton of respect for Australia. Obviously, having lived here and being in the industry, I realize that it's a very competitive market, and a good thing is that it forces companies to be really good at what they do. I also realized that it was a very sophisticated market, both in terms of selling media and buying media, also in terms of the consumer. The Australian consumer is as sophisticated as any consumer in the world. So the way I always looked at this market is this is a I mean, it's a sequestered market because it's on the other side of the world compared to the U.S., but it's a great place to really understand trends that are happening and even in some cases take some chances to see if it works. We're starting to do that a little bit in Australia. We're in some new businesses here that we're not in other places, and I see it as a big opportunity for us. Again, I think the rest of the world could learn a lot from what's going on here.
Okay. And I guess in terms of sort of summarizing for people that maybe aren't as, you know, aware of what you do, how do you kind of succinctly put that in terms of IAS's mission or what you do?
That's evolved a lot. And now I'm really working on the next version of the story. But the way that I describe it to people in the industry would be ultimately there's issues that have come up with digital that never existed before. You know, when you bought television or you buy print, like when I was at Time Inc. at one point selling print, you didn't have issues with non-viewable ads. You didn't have issues with fraud. You didn't have issues with brand safety. This is a new phenomenon that's happened because of digital. So what we do is we try to help the advertiser just get back to where they thought they were about 10 years ago, or back to zero, back to where every dollar actually has a chance of working. And it seems to resonate because, again, there's some frustration in the industry of all these issues that have come up. And ultimately, if we can just get rid of the impressions that have no chance of working and leave them with every dollar being spent on an impression that has a chance, then at least they're back to where we hoped we were before. Mm. And then we can really focus on what's working.
So I guess when we have some of these big brand safety issues or metrics, you know, sagas and things that come up with, I guess, kind of the failings of some of these big companies. And, you know, for you, is that kind of good because it raises that level of brand safety and then you get more people coming to you going, oh, my God, I need to do this. Like, is it kind of that negative side of the industry or when these big dramas come up that is a positive for you guys?
Well,
because
I think it's, first of all, it's important to understand that trying to solve for brand safety, and we'll say in a way that an ad never appears on a piece of content that's inappropriate, is a really hard problem. And even the perfect solution won't always solve for it. The way that you know, content's so dynamic and advertising nowadays, the decisions are programmatic where machines buy from machines. So there's a lot going on. So when an issue comes up, I'm not jumping up and down saying yay, because I know kind of it didn't happen on purpose. No one was trying to create a problem. So you got to feel some empathy right away for the problem. It has helped, helped our business, but for a lot of years, let's say for the last 3 or 4 years up until recently with some well-known, kind of issues on some of the walled gardens, people had kind of forgotten about brand safety. And we really were focusing on things like viewability and time and view and Ultimately, I think that's where we want to be as an industry, because that's where we're really starting to figure out what's working and how to improve advertising. So brand safety is super important, but I like to think that, like, I don't want the industry to worry about that. I want the industry to focus on the next thing, which is improving the impact of advertising.
Mm. And what do you see as, I guess, being a big challenge for you guys? Like, what is the big, I guess, business problem or the issue or the big thing that you're looking to kind of get over?
Well, so right now we're very focused on introducing this concept that time is a third dimension in buying advertising that no one's ever focused on. Particularly digital, we borrowed ideas from print, and it was all selling based on impressions. In print, we can't measure time, so you had to keep it equal on all impressions. But now we can, and yet as an industry, we tend to treat it as a binary metric. It's in view, it's not in view. It's good, it's bad. And time is an incredibly important asset that an advertiser needs to think about, because ultimately, if your ad is not in front of your consumer long enough to influence them, it doesn't matter how good the creative is. It doesn't matter how good the targeting is. And the longer it's in view, the better chance it has of working. And all the empirical evidence shows that. So we need to start focusing on that. So it's getting people to realize that. And it's hard, because there's a lot of legacy kind of attitude out there.
And I guess on those attitudes, how much is it, you know, you guys and I guess people on our side, the industry, pushing as opposed to marketers or clients really asking and kind of sticking their head up and saying, oh, we need to do this. Would you say you're leading it? Is it kind of 50, you know, what's the...
We're certainly trying to... We work with both publishers and advertisers, and we try to stay in the middle and surface data that's important for both. Ultimately, though, the brands are the ones who drive this industry forward. They have the dollars, and they're the ones who are going to make change happen. And so it is really having them understand, what's available and how they can improve impact. Fortunately, in the case of something like I'm talking about with time, is time is good for premium publishers and time is good for advertisers. So here's something that both should embrace, because it'll help both accomplish what they want to accomplish. But there's a lot of middlemen in this industry who aren't necessarily in that same kind of incentive.
So what do we do about the middlemen? What would they just...
Well, I don't think it's a matter of like trying to do a quick fix on anything, but I do think over time we are going to see the brands and the premium publishers exerting more control, because ultimately we moved fast to creating all kinds of new ways to target based on data. But what we see in our results is a good quality media placement is worth its weight in gold. And the more brands can kind of see that and understand it, it'll be really helpful.
Awesome. And in terms of, obviously, there was some recent big news with you guys with Vista Equity Partners acquiring a majority stake. How is that changing? How is that going to change the business? How soon will there be a change? Who will feel that change? What will the change be? Like, what's kind of the result of this?
Yeah, so we announced it a few weeks ago, and I think, like I said, it was the beginning of last week, and the close is supposed to be in July. So until it closes, there's really no change. But the reason that we ultimately decided we wanted to do this deal with Vista is because we see that there's a ton of opportunity for what we do, both in terms of verifying more types of media in more countries, also in terms of like what else we could be doing. We're in this unique position of trust where brands trust us and publishers trust us. And I think there's a lot more we could be doing to help both sides than just what we do today. And all that, though, requires capital, requires someone who believes in your vision. And we thought about, what the alternatives were, and fortunately knew these guys and had spent some time in the past. And they really like our vision. They see the huge opportunity. So I think it's just they're really going to help us be better at what we do and do more of it.
So do you think a lot of that funding, it sounds like it's going into expansion, or is this changing the product, or you feel like you've kind of got the product nailed down quite well?
Well, it's going to be more innovation, either around the products we do or further products. I'm sure it'll open up some.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acquisition opportunities that we probably wouldn't have been able to do before. So, you know, buying teams or buying technology to help kind of expand on what we do. And then definitely more regions. We're in 14 countries now, but there's appetite for what we do in pretty much every country that sells and buys media. So I'm not saying we're going to enter everyone, but we're certainly going to look at more opportunities and how we can help our brands. Because ultimately, the reason that we're global is because the brands we work with have asked us to help them globally, not just in one country, but around the world.
Right,
and
okay.
We want to take advantage to help them.
And what about, I guess, kind of talk or reports or rumors about, you know, for a whole acquisition or IPO? And, you know, what are your views on that? Or is it kind of those are the things raised and we decided to go for the majority stake? What's the?
Well, so the reason that we had talked about an IPO and continue to talk about an IPO because it is a way for us to remain as a neutral third party. And we think that's really important in the role that we play. Once you're acquired by another company, you no longer own your roadmap. Mm. You know, whether they're biased or not, you're really in a different business. So we wanted to remain as a neutral party and control our own destiny. And so certainly an IPO is one way to do that. But it is a long process, and you know, there's a lot of risk there just in terms of the market. If the market's not open for any new companies going public, you just got to wait it out. So what this does is it gives us the ability to take advantage of all the things that we wanted, which was remaining neutral, third party, being able to get access to capital to continue to grow. And also gives us that opportunity in the future. If we want to go public, we still can do it because, you know, we're not – Vista certainly is in the business of creating value, but they're also at some point going to want to figure out how to exit the business. So that's certainly one area for us.
Mm. And do you think, I guess, having that neutral independent stance, that is that one of the biggest selling points that you think you guys have? Do you think in terms of, you know, if you're look at your fast growth path, would you sort of attribute that largely, you know, in an era where, you know, we constantly writing a lot of stories about it, you know, whether it's arbitrage or transparency, that's something that's obviously comes across as quite a hard-hitting message from you guys about how independent you are. You know, so if you were to lose that, would you worry that could also, you know, spell trouble for the business?
Well, look, I think that anyone who sits between a buyer and a seller and helps to make sure the transaction is agreed upon by both sides, you need to not represent either side of it. I don't think that's why we're as successful as we are, because there are other players who are independent as well. I like to think about it that over time we've just been able to develop trust. You know, it's through our innovation and technology and products, but ultimately it's the people. And we came in this industry as a small player, and there are much bigger players. And we really focused on being transparent ourselves and being honest and trying to do the right thing. It didn't mean that we always had good news for people, because like when we tell someone that, you know, they have fraud on their site, it's not a good conversation. But we wanted to make sure that when we said something like that, that we felt really confident in our results. And so I think we've been able to develop trust with a lot of big brands and publishers. And ultimately, I think that's what we're selling, is trust. And trust is a really hard thing to get. At the same time, it's a really easy thing to lose. And everyone in the company knows that. And I think that's part of like what keeps us going, which is we know that we constantly need to make sure that we're not losing that trust.
Mm. And in terms of those conversations, you know, informing people about fraud on the site, you know, what tends to be, do you ever get any unexpected reactions of people, you know, maybe they just ignore it, or do you know what, they're still making a good bit of money on that? They can, you know, cause surely not everyone says, great, yes, sign me up for everything, you know.
And a lot of strange conversations over the years. Things have changed a bit, but in the early days, it was the elephant in the room that no one wanted to talk about. I had a lot of those conversations. I've had conversations where, you know, the person I was talking to buying the media was like, oh, this is really interesting. Thank you for this report. Has anyone else seen it? I'm like, no. And, you know, basically, get out of here, you're fired.
Mm. Right, okay.
And I've even had brands, lower level kind of digital people on the brand who knowingly were buying fraud.
Mm.
Because they were trying to hit their numbers.
I was going to say, and is there an element of wanting to hit the numbers, but also if they confess and say, oh, this has been happening on my watch, is that an element?
It's all true. It's a, hey, I need to continue to hit the numbers to get my budget. It's also a, if I admit to this, I could be fired because I'm admitting the fact this has been going on for a while. And so the longer you cover it up, the bigger the potential impact of talking about it. So, there's been a lot of that. I think we're past that as an industry, though,
yeah.
Because I think we're kind of everyone's recognizes that that was going on, and there's no one had a way to stop it, and it is what it is, and let's move forward. But certainly it was a very interesting and difficult time there for a few years. Same thing with non-viewable ads. You know, non-viewable ads perform super well in things like last touch attribution or view through based conversion metrics, which most people use. So there was a lot of pushback when we said, hey, you need to look at things like viewability. And people would say, no, I don't, because that's going to hurt my results.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working.
Yes, but hopefully you think we're kind of past that point. And just quickly on that, what are those job titles of people, you know, what are those specific job titles of people that would be the ones responsible for potentially covering it up, or
it's everyone. If you think about this industry, everyone pretty much gains on volume, and so particularly basically something like fraud, ultimately it hurts the brand, but everyone else benefits from fraud because they get paid for it, or it volume or whatever. So it could be anyone in that stream. And even on the brand side, like I said, I gave an example of someone who is not the CFO, is not actually responsible for the money, and they want to keep their jobs and they want to look like they're doing a good job. So unfortunately, when you build an industry based on kind of measuring false things or proxies that end up being misleading, you create this momentum towards doing, you know, not doing the right thing, and it's hard to stop it because everyone is paid based on it. Agencies are KPIs based on stuff that they don't want to blow up. Publishers are selling inventory. They need more inventory. They need more subscribers. It's easy to kind of shut their eyes and get traffic from sources that might not be the most reputable, and grow their numbers that way. So it's just, again, we're in a different place than we used to be, but
which is great, and it's important, you know, to remember, because I know the industry has had a lot of beatdowns, you know, whether it's across media or ad tech. So that's interesting to hear and important that, you know, things are very much, you know, on the up, and there has been that change.
Yeah, for sure, and it's, I think everyone's taking it seriously. It's not that there aren't people who are trying to still propagate things like fraud, but. I feel like we're in a much better place.
Mm. And I guess also, you know, focusing more on those positives, what are the things that you enjoy about the industry? You know, why work in the industry for so long? You know, it is technical. It does have its challenges. What is it that you really like about it?
You know, there's a few things. One is that there's so much opportunity. Like we're just still in the early stages of really figuring this out. I mean, we've been doing it for 20 years and we're in the early stages. So I think there's a ton of opportunity. And then like ultimately I love being creative, and I feel like in this industry, you can create. You can create new stuff overnight, and a lot of my job is like figuring out what's next and how to create it. So there aren't that many industries where it's so dynamic, and there's so much opportunity that you can do that. The flip side of that is it's hard because everyone can say they can create stuff, and sometimes it's really hard to to stand out because there's so much noise. Mm. And even if you have a great solution, you might walk into a room and they're like, oh, yeah, so-and-so and said they do that and 10 other companies say they do that. And you're like, wait, no, I'm the first.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of noise.
Has that happened in the past when you've been sort of beavering away on a product and then all of a sudden you get beaten by competition or it comes out and then you have to pull it back and be like, oh, no, we can't do that?
Well, it certainly happens, but more than getting beaten, it's that someone else says they have it or they can do it. And then it's like having to prove that actually,
right,
no, they can't because we're doing it a little bit a different way. And there's like a little nuance that is important but different. And people are like, look, you know, they say they do it. And to me, that's the same. And there's so much information.
Yeah, had that with maybe programmatic TV or certain types of attribution. And then it's like, oh, you dig into it and it's like, oh, actually, you're not quite.
For sure. And if you go and look at websites, and probably our website included, they all sound the same. Like at the end of the day, the same terms are being used, you know, optimization and programmatic and all the acronyms.
Yeah, we're cutting through those press releases daily.
And you like roll your eyes because you're like, oh, my God, I can't tell what they're doing.
Yeah.
And my wife comes to me sometimes. She used to be a recruiter and related. She was doing searches and related business, and she'd be like, hey, can you tell me what these people do? They're in your industry. And I'm like, oh, let me read the website. I have no idea what they do.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to know this really well. I've been in the industry forever. I can't tell because it sounds the same like everyone else.
Yeah. And especially just clicking on the about page of many companies.
Exactly.
It's impossible. So let alone how, you know, a client would understand that. Okay. I want to just move on to, I guess, some of your own sort of off the topic of brand safety and some of the tech side. And think, I guess, more about your own sort of personal streaming habits and subscriptions and just trying to get a bit of an insight into your media habits. So, I know you mentioned that you worked at Time before. What about print publications? Do you subscribe to anything in print? And what are your...
No, I'm a completely digital person, but I'm a big fan of the Time products, Fortune, Time magazine. Obviously, having worked there, I'm biased, but I think it's great stuff. I have an iPhone, so I use a lot of the Apple news.
Yeah. And TV streaming habits over in the States, you Netflix?
Yeah, so I'm not a Netflix.
I think you might be the first person that we've asked that's not Netflix.
It's not a Netflix from the States, yeah. Well, so I've got a 9-year-old and a daughter who's turning 12 tomorrow, and I tend to watch what they want to watch. So that's just kind of how it works, and I don't have a – and, you know, by the time they're in bed, I typically – have not watching my own TV. So we do a lot of Marvel and Star Wars and stuff like that.
So no streaming platforms, you know, on like Amazon Prime?
I do Amazon Prime. So we do use that a lot. It's interesting because I pay for cable, but I tend to use Vudu and some of the OTT apps a lot more than I use the cable.
Yeah. Okay.
So I haven't quite cut the cord yet, but there's no question that
quite.
There's a
okay.
lot of use going on outside of my cable.
Okay. And just on to ads, because obviously we, you know, work in advertising. I think it's always good to hear about maybe favorite ad at the moment, favorite ad of all time, anything that kind of springs to mind.
Wow, that's a big question, because there's been a lot of great ads. There's been a lot of bad ads too, and it's amazing like how much a good ad stands out in the sea of like average ads. And I'm not just saying this because I'm Australia, but I love the Crocodile Dundee Super Bowl ad.
Yeah, the tourism Australia.
Australia travel ad. That was really clever, well done, and it got a lot of accolade in the U.S. as well, just because everyone knows.
Awesome.
Everyone knows Crocodile Dundee, and ultimately everyone in the U.S. has a love affair with Australia. I think they think it's paradise. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. And what? Any American ads that spring to mind? Any even historic? Have you been to the Super Bowl? Have you?
I have not. No, I'd love to. I'm a big football fan, but tend to watch it with.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. You've chosen an Australian ad. That is perfect. You can say an American ad if there is a.
No. Being honest.
Okay. Awesome. Well, we're going to wrap it up there. But thank you very much for joining the Ad News podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.